Welcome to WGWG.org. I'm Nikki Bliss Carroll, and I'm joined in the studio today by a very special guest. Jay Zimmer joins us, and he is instructor of biology here at Gardner-Webb University. And he has come to share some information that he's gathered over the years on the physical death of Jesus. Jay, thank you for being here.
I appreciate it. This is a great subject to talk about, especially this time of the year, so thank you for bringing me in.
Absolutely. I know a few years back, I got to hear a very similar presentation at my home church, and it was stunning, the information that I just didn't realize was out there about the physical things that Jesus Christ went through in the hours preceding and in the day leading up to his crucifixion and death on a cross. And I really just, when I saw that you actually do these talks for Sunday school and church groups, I thought, what a great opportunity for us to kind of glean information from you, you know, someone who teaches courses like anatomy and physiology and human biology, and can kind of walk us through what Jesus experienced from that medical examiner's perspective.
Sure.
Okay. So start with us. I know we talked a little bit before about the Garden of Gethsemane, that there's a lot of rich information available to us about some of the psychological pressure that Jesus began to experience in the garden. And I guess we probably understand from Scripture that he knew that his death was near, as near as it had been. And so he really went through some physical symptoms that resulted from that psychological stress. Walk us through that. Talk to us a little bit about what he was going through from that medical perspective.
Okay. I think of Jesus, you know, a lot of people just think of him as a Christian. You know, I mean, he was the obedient Jew. I mean, he perfectly fulfilled the law. So I think of how many years he's gone up to Jerusalem to observe the Passover feast, seeing the lambs slaughtered, and eventually when his ministry kicked off, I mean, how was he identified by John the Baptist? You know, behold the Lamb of God. And at some point, he must have known that I will be the ultimate sacrifice. And there's numerous places in Scriptures that talk about him talking to his disciples, hey, you know, I'm going to be suffering and die on the cross, you know, and he knew all that information. The Passover season was there in the upper room, you know, they're in the upper room, and at that time, you know, they were, it's probably late at night, and they were dismissed, and they sang a worship song, and then they were going to head out to the Garden of Gethsemane. And being a Passover, it was a full moon, so they could probably see to some extent. And then they left Jerusalem, went through the Kidron Valley, and there was a stream there. And I wonder if, and there's some debate about if the Passover was on that day or another day, but if the stream he had to cross over was, if water was coming from that and from the temple, and if any blood from the temple area was coming across into the stream and mingling with it, and if he actually had to step across that blood. But he went into the Garden of Gethsemane, which means oil press, and so I think there's some symbolism there. And just, he knew what was coming down the pipe, and I think now that it's so close, the amount of pressure and stress he was feeling was, was very great. And to think that Jesus was so stressed out, he had to be ministered to by an angel, must have meant that he was going through quite a bit. Some of the things we see in there, Luke 22:44 talks about him being in agony. And in other places, in Mark, it talks about, my soul is overwhelmed with sorrow. And the amount of pain he was experiencing was, one Greek translator translated that word sorrow as horrified. And so he was extremely stressed out, and it talks later, Luke mentions, and his background is a physician. So I've read some articles in the whole Gospel of Luke. There's it's kind of peppered throughout with medical terminology, so he's obviously very knowledgeable about the human body. And it says, his sweat became like drops of blood falling down on the ground. And, you know, can that happen? You know, mm-hmm. is this something that medically can happen? And it's a rare condition, but it's well documented, called hematidrosis, where if a person is stressed out, it can activate their autonomic nervous system, their sympathetic fight and flight, and the mm-hmm. parasympathetic following behind that, and that can cause blood vessel diameters to change. And a lot of blood vessels are very close to the sweat glands, and it's a very short distance for the blood to get into the sweat. Mm-hmm. So some of these people in hospitals have actually done this, sweating blood in the presence of these of doctors and nurses. Mm-hmm. They were able to medically analyze it, and they found red blood cells, white blood cells, so it wasn't some magic trick in Kool-Aid mm-hmm. or something mm-hmm. of that nature.
Right.
So that definitely is able to happen. And the word actually in the Greek there is thromboi, which sounds like thrombus.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a little bit about the garden there.
And then immediately after that moment, and he was strengthened by the angels, as the word tells us, I mean, he gets up, he basically stirs Peter, James, and John, and then that group of soldiers is there to apprehend him. And so he leaves the garden, and he is taken to, we believe, the house of the high priest, Caiaphas. Walk us through what happened to him at that point. He went through a couple of trials overnight there with the high priest, and then the high priest took them to Pilate, which was the Roman governor at that point. Mm-hmm. Walk us through some of what he would have endured physically at those locations. And in the midst of this, he didn't say a whole lot.
Yes. That whole proceeding was very illegal. Mm-hmm. They were just trying to push things through to get this problem taken care of, this Jesus problem. And, you know, having legal proceedings held at night, and there's numerous things that they did out of order. But probably, at least from the physical point of view, he was probably not given a lot of water. It's probably, I mean, he's already stressed out from what he's experienced in the Garden of Gethsemane there. And then later on, with his abuse from the guards, being spat on and punched, and then eventually turned over, you know, to Pilate. And then it seems that Pilate knew he was an innocent man, and was just kind of hoping that he was, you know, how can I take care of this problem? And he had him scourged, and uh-huh. that scourging was, you know, a lot of theologians say, well, maybe if he scourged him, whipped him enough, that would satisfy the crowd, but the crowd just kept going, you know, and mm-hmm. wanted more, and mm-hmm. we know how that all turned out, and then eventually they asked for the crucifixion.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about that, the scourging that we probably, when we think about a beating, we probably aren't imagining something of this nature.
Yeah.
This is the cat of nine tails. Mm-hmm. This is whipping to the point of hitting bone. Talk us through some of that medical, what is happening to a person's body when they are whipped with a weapon like what Jesus was whipped with.
Okay. A lot of times in America, we think of a whip like with a cowboy, long mm-hmm. whip chasing cattle. You're exactly right. This, like, cat of nine tails, it was, they call it a flagellum or flagrum, and it was designed for torture. And it was a very routine thing, a preliminary thing done before any Roman execution. The only people that were exempt from flogging were women, Roman senators, and soldiers, except in the case of desertion. And they would put, you know, the most torturous things they could find into this whip. A lot of times it would have lead balls in there, pieces of glass, I've heard of dice, bones from sheep, whatever they could find. And the length they would have at multiple lengths, so when they whipped a person, it would spread out the pain into mm-hmm. a larger surface. And what would actually happen to the body during this? The lead balls, if they use lead It would cause severe bruising. Mm-hmm. The bones or the glass would just tear away the skin, probably maybe even getting to the point where a fluid was accumulating around the lungs. A lot of people would have broken bones. The instance of Jesus is recorded, no bones were broken, so mm-hmm. that probably didn't happen. Then you'd start to go into shock. Mm-hmm. You'd see the kidneys shutting down, a lot of sweat, convulsions possibly, faintness, erratic heartbeat. And a lot of people didn't even make it past these floggings. Mm-hmm. And Jesus, you know, they gave him an extra dose. And mm-hmm. A lot of times people think of, well, isn't there a limit to flogging? We read in the scriptures that it can't be more than 30 or 40 lashes. Mm-hmm. But being Roman soldiers, I mean, it was whatever they felt like it. Mm-hmm. Typically, a soldier on each side. They'd have the person bent over a pillar or tied with their hands up in the air to a pillar just to inflict more pain. Mm-hmm. And they just worked them over. A mm-hmm. person was stripped naked for mm-hmm. you know, to humiliate them. And I would imagine they worked all the way from the neck with the whippings all the way down, buttocks, mm-hmm. thighs. Mm-hmm. And when it was over, the person was just shredded pretty bad. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the things that I know, of course, there's probably differences in opinion on the time of year that this occurred, but most people do put the date of Jesus' crucifixion in early April. Mm-hmm. And that given the latitude and the time frame, the time of year, the temperature of the evening may have helped prevent mm-hmm. him from losing more blood because it would have, you know, caused the blood flow to, you know, constrict a little bit and coagulate quicker, I guess.
Yeah. Usually when you're colder, your skin is like a blood reservoir and blood is pulled away from the skin and, you know, vasoconstriction. So you're exactly right.
So that probably prevented him from losing so much blood that he died before the actual crucifixion took place. But after those trials and beatings and, I mean, we didn't even mention the crown of thorns, but that being another element of the torture. Do you want to take a minute to talk about
sure.
the thorns themselves and the, I guess, the trauma that would have taken place around his head and skull?
Yeah, the thorns, a lot of times we think of thorns as berry bush thorns or sand spurs or something of that nature. I've read a couple articles which species of plant this was, and there's been multiple ones, and the thorn size was like 1.5, 2 inches. I mean, mm-hmm. huge thorns, and pressed into the scalp. The face has a huge number of blood vessels, extremely sensitive, and pressing that onto the head. There's actually, I've listened to some doctors discuss bleeding from the scalp, and some people have actually bled to death from blood loss from the scalp. Mm-hmm. So again, you know, this added to the other things is, I mean, his body was pretty decimated. And this is even before the crucifixion,
right.
like you mentioned.
Right. So it's not a surprise after thinking about all of these things that he'd endured that he wasn't able to bear the weight of the cross as the people who were sentenced to execution would carry their own cross to the location. And that's where we read in scripture that it was carried for him. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I saw in some of the research I had done was just that many people don't even make it past that journey, that there's so much blood loss, so much trauma to the body, as you mentioned, that the chances of surviving the previous several hours were pretty minimal, and yet mm-hmm. he's still on his feet, at least to some degree able to continue moving forward towards mm-hmm. this moment that he's known has been coming his entire life, essentially. Let's talk for a minute about the crucifixion itself. I mean, we know that the Romans designed it as a mode of punishment to inflict the most amount of pain and to make death take, I guess, as long as it possibly can. Mm-hmm. Walk us through what you've learned about crucifixion and then the different aspects of crucifixion as it related to Jesus's death.
With crucifixion, it's important to understand what was the goal. The whole goal is not to kill the person. I mean, that is one of the end results. You know, how many people have been killed with the Roman gladius, you know, right. And Jesus could have been killed in some back alley or poisoned or something. And I cannot think of a more painful way to die than crucifixion, mm-hmm. the most painful. Also with crucifixion, it was not invented by the Romans. I think it was the Assyrians or some other ancient culture. Start off as impaling, and then it just morphed. You know, what are some more torturous things we can do? And if the hands are extended high above the body, a person dies quicker. So they would have the person's arms outstretched to prolong the agony. And we're all familiar with Spartacus. And after that revolt, they lined a road to Rome with, hundreds and hundreds of these gladiators that revolted. So crucifixion was, it wasn't just a Jesus thing. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times they would, you know, it was done to humiliate the person. And a lot of times the message was just to tell the population, you know, we are Rome and you are not, and you need to know your place. Mm-hmm. And they would try to find a public hill or a crossroads where a lot of people would pass. And, you know, I wonder how many people had Jesus seen crucified prior to this. It was not something that was unusual. And done in a very public place. Like I mentioned earlier, a person was often naked. And the cross was extremely heavy, sometimes. You know, people depict Jesus carrying the whole thing, and mm-hmm. that would be estimates of close to 300 pounds. Mm-hmm. And even if you're not injured, carrying that would be very challenging. You know, you're talking about length of a couple football fields here mm-hmm. to get up to where they think Golgotha was. And so most historians would say it's just the top crossbeam, and that mm-hmm. was probably 130, 150. I mean, I imagine it varied quite a bit. So Jesus would have to carry this very rough timber on his back, and his back was already shredded, and going up the streets, being humiliated, mm-hmm. and, you know, eventually getting to Golgotha.
So. Now, when your body goes through shock, is there any kind of desensitizing to the nerves? I mean, are you feeling every single ounce of pain, or is there a protection that your body will kind of launch to keep those things from being felt?
Well, there is something when we exercise. Endorphins, which are like a natural painkiller. Sometimes people experience a runner's high. Sometimes you have adrenaline going through your body, which makes things much more vivid. Some people think that, well, if you have an injury in one part of your body and you injure another part of the body, it'll kind of hide that injury from you and you're not as aware of it. Actually, medical examiners and doctors will say, well, the pain is compounding. You're mm-hmm. even more aware of it. And like during the crucifixion of Christ, putting a nail right through your hand, and there's some debate if it was in the hand or if it was in the wrist. Either way, very close to the median nerve. And soldiers have experienced pain or an injury to the median nerve, and it's a phenomenon called causalgia. And sometimes just the wind blowing on your skin can cause excruciating pain. Mm-hmm. And here you have a nail going through the hands and through the feet. Some people think it's unlikely that the nail was going through both feet with one long nail. That would be very difficult to pound a nail to be able to hit both of those. And they've actually found some archaeological evidence of a heel bone of crucifixion. And there's the nail still stuck through it. So there's an early crucifix depicting Jesus, and it shows two nails in the feet and one for each foot. And so some people are more in favor of that theory. But either way, you know, the pain of these huge nails and bearing your weight on them mm-hmm. was unbearable.
And your skin on the entire back side of your body where you're going to be pressing up against that timber is completely, it's not intact anymore. And I mean, you know, it paints a very gory and troublesome picture in your mind of what Jesus was enduring. One of the things I think I saw in your PowerPoint that you had shared with me was that the bottom nails were really to prolong death, which you would think your feet being nailed together mm-hmm. would extend, you know, it would quicken, hasten death, that it would come faster. But what is the idea behind that nail through the feet that keeps the victim from dying quicker?
Yeah, they had, some people have been tortured where they had their hands behind them, holding them in the air, suspended, and those people would have a very hard time breathing and would die very quickly. Mm-hmm. That kind of defeated the whole purpose of crucifixion, to prolong it. And so there were various things that were done. Nailing the feet, putting like a little stand for the feet, a little seat for the person to kind of sit on, and just to, you know, drag it out as long as possible to give the person some hope that they could survive. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly right what you're saying there. It's just trying to prolong things. Mm-hmm. And the nailing of the feet would do that. It would allow the person to breathe much longer.
Mm-hmm. And so the nature of crucifixion is essentially you're limited in the amount of air that can be brought in. Is that kind of walk us through that? Asphyxiation is what some people say. You end up, because of the way that they would have to kind of writhe around on the cross itself in order to get air in and mm-hmm. then expel it. So is that accurate, or is that sort of maybe
that's
something
one.
We've heard?
Yeah, that's one theory. Most of the people with strong medical training that have looked at the crucifixion and studied the Gospels, looked at historical issues, they're pretty similar in what was probably happening to the body in the Garden of Gethsemane, the flogging. And then once you get up to the crucifixion, if a medical examiner had to write cause of death, of course they just wouldn't write crucifixion. What would they write on there? A very popular theory was that Jesus suffocated. He mm-hmm. was not able to lift his body up and down to be able to breathe. There's a book by Frederick Zugerby, and they've actually had volunteers, and they didn't put nails through their hands, but with leather straps, and they put them on a cross. Mm-hmm. And these people, they could, I wouldn't say easily, but they could breathe. Mm-hmm. And from that evidence, some researchers say that it was probably not asphyxiation, the lack of oxygen, that caused death. Probably a great deal of pain in the arm muscles and leg muscles, but other people speculate pleural effusion. Maybe all the fluid accumulating around the lungs mm-hmm. could have caused death. Another person speculated hypovolemic shock, which means you just run out of blood, not mm-hmm. getting enough oxygen all around. Mm-hmm. Another one is cardiogenic shock. You know, maybe the person's heart is just going to shut down from all the stress. Cardiac arrhythmia is another one, have some sort of irregular heartbeat. Probably the most interesting clue that I find in Scripture is when Jesus was talking and he had his senses about him the whole time, which I find is absolutely amazing. Mm-hmm. But at the very end, you know, my God, why have you forsaken me? And he mm-hmm. says that in a loud voice.
Right.
So that I hesitate to pick a theory to where things are just kind of winding down gradually, like asphyxiation or shock, you know?
Right, because he wouldn't be able to get enough breath in to be loud.
Yeah, it almost seemed like he would just be...
It would be like a whisper.
Just kind of faint away.
Yeah.
And the two theories that seem to best explain it, one is a natural theory, one's more of a supernatural theory. The more natural one is... maybe his heart just ruptured, you know. And I know that's a very romantic thing in a sense, saying that Jesus died of a broken heart. Mm-hmm. But, that is an option, and that would cause a very, very quick death of a person. And other people will say that maybe he just couldn't kill Jesus, you know, and he had to freely give up his life. Mm-hmm. And, I can see the reasoning for that, mm-hmm. because all throughout this whole suffering, he should have died a long time ago, mm-hmm. and from a multiplicity of reasons, and how he stayed alive so long and still was able to talk is just mind-boggling.
Right, absolutely. So he cries with a loud voice and breathes his last as he, right after he says, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit," which supports that theory of him laying his life down,
yeah.
not it being taken from him.
Mm-hmm.
When the soldiers, well, often we have read, I don't know if this is accurate, you may be able to dispel this rumor, but you would hear about the legs being broken
mm-hmm.
so that the person could no longer move up and down and breathe freely, or as freely, I guess, as you can while being crucified, which would hasten death.
Mm-hmm.
But when they got to Jesus, that was not necessary because he was already gone.
Yeah.
And then we see a picture of the sword being plunged into his heart, his mm-hmm. side, I guess, and blood and water emerges from. Walk us through that. What does that mean
sure.
from a medical perspective?
Yeah. So they wanted to make sure he was dead. I mean, their jobs were on the line.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Rome was pretty rough. So these soldiers, they knew death, and they knew how to crucify people, and they were very efficient at it. So breaking of the legs would hasten it
mm-hmm.
for a lot of different reasons. The spear thrust into the side, again, where would you stick that? The most logical place from a soldier, from a medical point of view, would not be dead center. You have your sternum.
Right.
Imagine they just went straight for the heart. You know, we read about that in the scriptures there. And probably went between the ribs, and it said blood and water flowed
mm-hmm.
is the order that we read about it in our versions.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, some people have pondered, well, what's meant by that? Well,
mm-hmm.
I mean, the blood, it's pretty obvious. If you stick somebody in the heart, blood is going to come out.
Mm-hmm.
What about the water? You know, from an untrained medical point of view, I'm sure they didn't have the word, pericardial fluid,
you know,
the fluid around the heart. And it's a watery fluid that lubricates the heart. It's in the pericardial sac and prevents friction. You have the lungs moving at a different rate than the heart.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I understand from the people that understand Greek languages is that in English grammar, we think of, when we see blood and water, we think chronology.
Mm-hmm.
You know, first the blood came out, then the water. But in the Greek, from what I understand, that it's a matter of emphasis to where if we did a very sloppy translation, it could have read, and then they put the blood, you know, pierced Jesus in his side, and a lot of blood and a little bit of water came
mm-hmm,
out.
Mm-hmm.
So that seems to be a more realistic, truer to the text interpretation.
Right. And does that indicate one of these causes of death as being more likely, less likely, or does it still kind of leave it a little bit hazy?
Yeah. Oh, you'd probably expect it in all of these.
Okay.
You know, so I don't know if that really puts one
it's not like a
above
big clue.
The other.
Right, right.
Yeah, not from what I could see.
Yeah.
I haven't read anything where they steered a certain direction from that line of evidence.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So in your, I mean, and this really is just hitting the tip of the iceberg, as you mentioned, the book that's really spoken really well of this, all of the things that Jesus endured, but is called, the name of the book is The Crucifixion of Jesus, A Forensic Inquiry, and it's written by a medical examiner.
Mm-hmm.
And you said that for you, this has been really one of the best written pieces, sort of offers a comprehensive view on that, the medical pathology behind his
mm-hmm.
his death and the suffering that led up to his death. As you've been doing this research and looking into this, what has been sort of the biggest eye-opener or aha moment for you?
I never really realized just how much of the Gospels are on that last week. I forget which Gospel it is. There's one Gospel that, I mean, Jesus lived about 33 years old to that age, and about a fifth of one Gospel is just focusing on that last week of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go to the book of John, the disciple whom Jesus loved, and close to a third of that book is focused on that last week of Jesus,
mm-hmm.
the last moments of his life. And just, you know, how important that is. In my research recently, I was just kind of going over things, and what really stood out to me is what Jesus was doing. I mean, the crucifixion has that huge theological importance. And the Jews, they were looking for a military Messiah, you know, and every time they went to the Passover, they would celebrate, yeah, this is when we shook off those crazy Egyptians. Mm-hmm. And then they would leave and walk around their town, their city, and see the Romans. So that was very difficult. But I'm amazed at Jesus. I mean, he was so unselfish, even to the very end. Mm-hmm. And on the Via Dolorosa, carrying his cross, and women were wailing and crying behind him, and he would talk to them, he'd minister to them. Mm. You know, women don't mourn, you know. And then he's getting crucified, and he's saying to the soldiers, you know, Father, forgive them, for right. they know not what they do. Mm-hmm. And then the people next to him he's trying to scoop up one more soul for mm-hmm. heaven, and evangelizing mm-hmm. to the thief next to him, mm-hmm. and even taking care of his mother, you know. And it just blows me away at the depth of his love. And a lot of times, you know, we're alone with our thoughts at night, staring at the ceiling and wondering, you know, does God really exist? Does God love me? Does God know what I'm going through? And we may not have good mental answers to those questions, but sometimes we just have to meditate on just the tragedy and the love and the unselfishness mm-hmm. of what we see at the cross. And that, I find, is just beyond comprehension. Is that all?
So beautifully said. Yeah, and I think sometimes we want to have that clinical, smart, knowledgeable answer, and sometimes it's just something you know is true. Yep. And you may not be able to explain it, but you can certainly feel it. Mm-hmm. Jay Zimmer, thank you so very much for being here. I mean, such a subject of deep gravity, but I also think that you know, often, I think especially in the Protestant faith, we may not sit here frequently enough to really contemplate what Christ did for us. Mm-hmm. And it's been sobering, and it's been encouraging to hear about it through the eyes of someone who understands our physical body and sort of what we would go through if we were walking that path as well. And praise the Lord, we don't have to worry about that. Any other final thoughts or comments?
I just really appreciate you asking me to come in, and it's this is a topic that is so important, mm-hmm. and it's very humbling to talk about, and I just really appreciate this. Very much of an honor to speak about this.
Well, thank you. And I will mention, too, that Jay is available to local church mm-hmm. groups and has a really lovely presentation kind of already prepared. So if you are interested in reaching out to him for more information on how you can connect and possibly mm-hmm. bring him into your church group, we will provide some information in the description below our interview today. Jay Zimmer, instructor of biology here at Gardner-Webb University, thank you so, so much for being here with us.
Thank you, Nikki.
For WGWG.org, I'm Nikki Bliss Carroll.